Okay, dear venerable brother, dear friends in Dhamma, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. First of all, we pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Okay, actually we were discussing Chabbisodhana Sutta. Literally it means 6 types of purity. Maybe we can say 6 types of purifications. And it is available in the Majjhima Nikaya, in the 3rd book. And basically this is where Buddha explains about certain criteria, how one can recognize or how one can properly question an arahant. Actually, studying this doesn't mean that we are learning it just to verify the so-called arahants available today. Rather, what we are trying to do is to understand the content, what the proper practice is included in therein. So basically, each and every purification mentioned here recognize certain type of practice, and those are extremely important for vipassana and again to verify our own practice. Because even though we are not arahants, we have to travel in the same path, we have to develop the same path, cultivate the same path. So by analyzing these 6 kinds of purification, we can recognize whether our practice, our path, is it aligned with the explained path. So that is why we are trying to analyze this sutta, go through it closely. And interestingly, even though the name says 6 types of purification, actually the sutta contain only 5 types of purifications. So it is mentioned by the commentator that during the oral tradition, in between one seems to have lost. And interestingly, there is 6 available in the Agama books, Majjhima Agama books available coming from the Chinese tradition. Chinese and Tibetan tradition. So there are certain other 6th purification is included. So therefore, we can recognize what would be the 6th purification, and that is fairly recommended by the commentator as well. So we can, at the end of the discussion, we can consider that 6th purification as well. Now we have already conducted, discussed about 2 types of purification. So the scenario is that when a particular monk declare that he is an arahant, so Buddha mentioned that we can be happy about it, but again we can't immediately grasp it. We can't immediately say yes, you are an arahant. Rather, Buddha mentioned without immediately accepting and without immediately rejecting, now you need to have some kind of an understanding or kind of a cross verification. So there, the verification is included based on certain criterion, that is based on certain questions. So each question asks about different kinds of looking at the Dhamma. So how one can approach the Dhamma, and one can incorporate that to the practice, and by going through that practice, how one can ultimately become an arahant. So the first question is based on the 4 types of what we call the vohara, the expression. So we are communicating with the whole world based on our senses, and particularly when we are summarizing it, we can say through the eyes, through the ears, that is ditta and sutta, and then nose, tongue and body is taken as together, kind of sense organ, so that is called as the mutta, and then ultimately the 4th one, that is the mind, that is the vinyata. So how one can dealt with these 4 types of vohara, 4 types of expressions when he is going through the practice. So this is the first question asked from the so-called arahant, and he may, if he is a proper arahant and if he went through the proper practice, he may definitely and without much trouble, he may answer like this. So Buddha explained how he would answer. So basically his answer is very much how, even though he see, even though he hear, even though he sense, and even though he cognize, so his mind is capable of unattracting, or basically getting, avoiding attachment, again avoiding any kind of repulsion, and again independent, detached, free, and without any association, and again without generating any defilements, and ultimately so that the mind is free from any of these sense impingements. As a result of that, the mind is free and there is no any particular narrowing, there is no any kind of a strong focusing, rather mind is completely open, not bound to any particular boundary. So this is the way that he is explaining each and every faculty or vohara, the specification. And then Buddha mentioned, after hearing that proper answer, so you can acknowledge that, you can be happy about it, but don't just satisfy it with that. Now you have to ask another question. Then he is asking about the question on what you call the aggregates. So that is what we discussed last time about the second purification. So this second purification is based on the aggregates. Probably you can remember we dealt with aggregates in detail in the Kajjaniya Sutta, what we discussed just before. And similarly, here also Buddha mentioned that you have to ask about the aggregates, and then the right person may answer them properly, answer the question properly. So the question is very much like when you are dealing with the aggregates, how properly you dealt with that, so that your mind, without getting attached, without getting hooked up, how your mind slowly completely released. So similarly, the answer comes based on the detachment. So he understood each and every aggregate as fairly feeble or weak, and again it is subjected to fading away, and again cannot find kind of a comfort. You can't depend on it. So by knowing this, slowly he is able to renunciate or abandon, relinquish, give up all the kinds of attachments, all the kinds of graspings, all the kinds of mental standpoints, and again adherences, and whatever the latent tendencies caused because of those attachments. Now, that is the type of answer the proper arahant might give. Now, this is the second question asked from the arahant, and if he answered properly, then Buddha mentioned, okay, you can be happy about it, but anyway, don't stop there, you can ask the third question. Now we are going to discuss the third question. The third question is based on the six kinds of elements. Now, you know, these are different methodologies how Buddha explained the Dhamma. And again, certain people are more familiar with aggregates. Certain people are more familiar with, say, elements. Certain people are more familiar with how the senses are working and communicating and that type. So therefore, in a way, this is kind of a explanation given based on the elements. And here the question is going like this. Friend, there are these six elements rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Now, six elements are there. So what are those six? Earth element, water element, fire element, air element, space element, and the consciousness element. Now, typically we have heard about four elements, which are the factors of the physicality, material form. It could be our body, maybe someone else's body, maybe any kind of other inanimate physical thing. So everything is made up with these four elements. Patavi, apo, tejo, vayo. Patavi is the earth element, apo is the water element, tejo is the fire element, and vayo is the air element. Now, other than this, there are two more elements included in these six elements. So those two elements are space element and the consciousness element. Actually, space element is where, when there is no gathering of four elements available, what is available is the space element. Say, for example, if you consider the space, say outside the earth, so only few say space objects are available, say different planets, etc. But vast majority is empty. So that is what we call as the space. Similarly, if you consider even in the physical world, so if you consider air, so there are a fair amount of space available when we consider air as well. But on the other hand, if you consider something solid, very less air is available because it's very much compact. So typically, if you go deeper, sometimes it is mentioned each and every element is very much arranged within the space element. So there are certain gaps, there are certain space available within the space. All these four kinds of elements. So therefore, they are not really compact, but they are distinct. But that lead to kind of a notion of particle theory. But when we are analyzing the four elements, we are not going to that. Rather, we are trying to recognize their operation, how they are manifesting. Say, for example, earth element manifest six ways. So its presence can be recognized whether it is hard or whether it is smooth, or rather say soft, whether it is gross or whether it is smooth, whether it is heavy or whether it is light. So these are the six characteristics we attribute to earth element. So whenever we are able to recognize any of these characteristics, we say they are the earth element is present. On the other hand, if we consider water element, it has two characteristics. One thing is the flowing, the other one is the cohesion. So you know, if you consider some amount of cement, so it is just a dust. But when we put some water to it, then it has a kind of this cohesive power, so that all the cement particles are bound together. Then it becomes a kind of a concrete. So likewise, the water element has this cohesive characteristics. So its cohesion is also it's a one characteristic. Similarly, it is flowing. So this flowing is also a water element's characteristic. So whenever we are recognizing any of these two characteristics, then we can say, okay, water element is available. It is available within ourselves, within our body, and again in the outside. Similarly, if we consider what you call the air element. Air element is moving. The movement is available because of the air element. And again, the maintaining the posture, maintaining the balance in the posture. So all these things are because of the pressure coming from the air element. So that is also representing as a characteristics of the air element. So the supporting nature coming from as a pressure, and again the moving part. So whenever we are able to recognize these two characteristics, we can say, okay, the air element is present. The last one is the Tejo Dhatu, what we call the heat element. So hot or cold are the characteristics of heat element. So whenever these two characteristics are available, we say, okay, heat element is present. Now these things are fairly familiar, and again we discuss this in detail in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta that is also available in the Majjhima Nikaya. So this is what we are trying to recognize through our elements meditation. You have heard about elements meditation available in the Satipatthana Sutta, what you call Dhatu Manasikara. So there Buddha mentioned, so you need to recognize each and every element through their characteristics. Now, anyway, the space element and consciousness element we can discuss further. So anyway, before going to one by one, actually then the question is how you properly operate on them. And six elements are rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One. How does the Venerable One know? How does he see? And regarding these six elements, so that through not clinging, his mind is liberated from the taints. Now, these are not outside. I mean, these six elements are not outside. These six elements are what we are. So, how you operate on these six elements so that your mind get released? So, this is the question asked. So, for example, when we are living in the world, So actually, it is not that we say that I am attached to earth element or I am attached to water element, I am attached to air element, I am attached to fire element. Rather, so there are various other components generated by the combination of all these four elements. And even we can say the five elements. And if we consider the animate things, again the six elements. All six elements are there. So they are the ones we are attached with. Say then we are giving various names. This is a table, this is a chair, this is a laptop, this is a recorder, this is a cup, or this is a cup of tea, this is orange juice, or this is a man, this is a woman, this is a girl, this is a boy, this is a daughter, this is son. So these are all different names actually we are giving. So actually what is inside is nothing but six elements. But in order for clear recognition and distinctly recognizing them, and again for easy communication, we are attributing so many names, so many labels. So using those names, labels, we are talking, we are communicating, and ultimately we think those labels, whatever represented by those labels, are real. They are true. There is really a man exists, there is really a woman exists, there is really a son exists, there is really a daughter exists, there is really a table exists, there is really a, say, cup exists. So likewise, our mind get slowly conditioned by this communication technique, or what we call the conventional reality. And we are fighting for that. If someone uses different name, or someone want to change it, then we are fighting. So we are so much attached to all these conventional things which are actually based on the six elements. Now the question is how one has liberated one's mind from these six elements. Now I have given a little account on the four elements. Now if we consider the space element, so space element, as I mentioned, is where there are cavities available, I mean there are holes available, so there is no much four elements present there. So wherever the four elements are absent, that is where we can say the space element are present. So therefore all the physical phenomena we can fairly explain using these five elements: earth, water, fire, wind or air, and the space, nothing else. So this is a kind of a simplified analysis of the materiality, simplified analysis of the complete physical world, and it could be internal and it could be external. Now how are we recognizing this? Now that is through the say direct experience, not merely through the book or merely through hearing. Rather we have to directly experience their function based on our own practice. So that is where Dhatu Manasikara is extremely important. Now, interestingly, the answer given is based on the practice. Now, you can see, even today, scientists have gone very far. So, they have recognized all different characteristics of these elements. And they even give various other components, or what we call as the atoms, and subatomic particles. So, they have gone very, very far. And they have done various experiments. And we also sometimes learn in our science class, maybe chemistry, physics. So we are learning. So can we say that we understood them properly? And we can say, okay, I am a physicist, I am a chemist. So we can say like that. But that is not the understanding expected here. So you can't say the scientists are arahant, even though they have analyzed the physical world in detail using various scientific instruments. We can't say they properly know it. But here, the understanding is different from them. Expected understanding by the arahant is quite different from the kind of scientific understanding that we have today. Now, the proper understanding is based on not recognizing all these six elements as I, me, mine, and any of the other things not recognized as me or myself. Now, five elements we already discussed, and another sixth element is something that somewhat tricky, we can say. That's the consciousness element. Now, through consciousness element, actually we are cognizing. So here, when it comes to elements, so similarly Buddha mentioned kind of a function of the consciousness element. So that is how one can distinctly recognize various states. So that's an example Buddha giving. For example, in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, so the presence of consciousness element or the function of consciousness element is basically explained through a simple example. That is where when you are chewing maybe some lump of rice or whatever the food, there you can distinctly recognize, okay, this is salty, this is bitter, or this is pleasant, or this is sugary, or say sweet. So different kinds of tastes. So different types of tastes you can distinctly recognize when you are chewing something, when you are tasting something. Now everything is mixed, but you can distinctly recognize. So this is something that we can understand. Okay, the function of consciousness is to establish. So it is trying to establish our attention. So when many tastes are available, one kind of taste is predominant. If it is sweet, so that sweet taste is predominant, and then our attention is well established there. So this is the function of consciousness. So whenever the consciousness is properly established, we can say, okay, among many objects, sensible objects, so one has drawn the attention. Now one's mind has firmly established, one's consciousness has firmly established there. Now it has a footing. Now, availability of this function is something that we need to understand, but actually that is little difficult because that depends on the fair understanding, and not only the understanding, fair refined attention. I mean, knowing consciousness is in a way a little challenging. So that's why we start with the easy ones based on the four elements or five elements, and later with that knowledge, with that experience, with that developed faculties, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, etc., then you can approach a recognition of the consciousness element. And here the answer is going like this. Friends, I have treated the earth element as not self. Na attato upagacching. And with no self based on the earth element. Nacha patavi dhatu nisitam attanam. Now, it's very much kind of telling that I don't now identify earth element as myself. And I again don't understand there's a kind of a relationship between myself and the earth element. There is self separately, away, which is distinct from the earth element. So there is a relationship between myself, so this so-called individual self, and the earth element. I don't say like that either. So the first one is very much like self and earth element are the same. Second one is self is different, earth element is different, and there's a kind of a relationship. So the proper Arahant would say, I am not having any of these two kind of views. And I'm not identifying any of these. So how to do this? Now that is where the practice is important. So at the beginning we have this kind of a self notion. We consider there is a person here. Within the body there is a person. Within the body there is I. Or else we think, okay, this body belongs to me. Or maybe someone even can say, okay, self is different and body is different and this self belongs to the body. So different kinds of ways that we can have a relationship with the physical world, anyway, which is representing kind of an existing self, existing person, existing individual. So through the practice, we are verifying whether is it true, and through this verification, we should be able to abandon this wrong view. Or we can say the Sakkaya Ditti, the self-identification. Now that is why very beautifully Buddha mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta, when he is explaining what you call Dhatu Manasikara. So he mentioned there is a butcher, he with a very beautiful simile. So he mentioned there is a butcher who is killing a cow. So when he is killing a cow, so he has the notion of cow. He has perception of cow. He is killing a cow, basically an animal he is killing. So the notion of animal, notion of cow is what he is operating with. But after killing, now it is dissecting the body and removing the skin and now preparing, say, meat to sell, flesh to sell. Now suppose now he is now at a whatever the junction at the fair. Now people are asking beef from him. Now he's selling beef. Now there is no notion of animal or cow, rather he is having the notion of flesh, meat or beef. So the notion, the perception has completely changed. So Buddha mentioned this is the kind of way the notion of self or a person, individual, has to change during the practice of vipassana or during the practice of Dhatu Manasikara. So at the beginning you start as a person, okay, I am meditating, I am walking, I am breathing, so I am experiencing. So this is the way we refer. But slowly when we are closely examining the body and recognizing various element characteristics, more and more we understand, okay, element characteristics are there. Maybe five elements are there. So through these five elements, other than these five elements, there is no person. So this is the kind of an understanding slowly one would get. So that is why the practice is highly important. So while sitting you are examining, while walking you are examining, while during the other postures you are examining. And through this examination you are understanding, okay, it is nothing but the four elements or nothing but the five elements. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, so that very knowledge that you have gained by direct experience, you can apply now to the outside as well. That's a kind of inferential knowledge. So you know very well through your direct experience, okay, there is nothing here, just the elements. So then how can there be a person outside, an individual outside, animal outside? That too has to be elements. So all the physical world has to be element. So that's why Buddha mentioned Yacheva kopana ajjattika patavidhatu, yacha bahira patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa. So Buddha mentioned here, so whatever the earth element, whether it is internal or external, it is external, it is nothing but patavidhatu, just the element. So this is applicable to all the water element, air element, heat element, space element, because internally also we have space element. If you consider the various kind of cavities available within the body, so that is where space element is available. So it is nothing but the same space element what is available outside. So the distinction between say me and you, or internal and external, so this distinction slowly fade away. So what you have is nothing but the earth element, nothing but water element, nothing but fire element, nothing but say heat element, or nothing but space element. Now this, therefore the practice is based on the Kayanupassana, and then one may come across this understanding of elements. What is available is nothing but elements. So this understanding slowly helps to abandon the detach, abandon the attachment, abandon the grasping, abandon the wrong notion of I. Because when there is elements and they are highly subjected to arising and passing away, how can there be a existing self, permanent self, everlasting self? So that's, those are the questions that slowly practitioner may ask and he may realize. So Buddha mentioned, so when one is practicing like this, Patavidhatu nisita upaya upadana chetaso adhittana abhinivesa anusaya තේසං කයා විරාගා නිරෝධා ඡාගා පටිනිස්සග්ගා විමුක්තම් මේ චිත්තන්ති පජානාමි. Now he is mentioning that when I am going through practice, so there were certain attachments, there were certain mental standpoints, and there were certain graspings, and all those slowly start to fade away. It is not that immediately we are able to get rid of everything, but when we are continuing the practice, Buddha mentioned, whatever there was any kind of attachment towards the Patavi Dhatu, earth element, so that start to fade away. Tesang Khaya, that start to fade away, that starts to sort of cease, gradually cease. And then I have kind of a dispassion towards this, the dispassion slowly arising. And similarly, existing defilements, attachments, craving, that all start to cease. Then was able to give up, chaga, parinissagga, was able to relinquish. It is not kind of a forceful relinquishment, rather relinquishment happened naturally. Previously I had so much of attachment to this body, I identified it as my body, or I had a strong attachment towards someone else's body, identified he as someone. But now the practice helps to understand differently, and as a result of that, the attachment has slowly faded away. Attachment has slowly abandoned, relinquished. Now, same has to happen with the fire element. So Buddha mentioned, the same similar explanation is given to fire element, air element, space element, and the consciousness element. Now, actually, say four material elements are easy to understand, and that is what we do in the Kayanupassana. Now, consciousness element is something different, so that is something that we can pay little attention. Now, as I have just explained, so Buddha giving kind of an example of the ability or the function of consciousness element, that is by distinctly recognizing. So that is the one making a kind of a distinction. Me, you. That distinction is made by the consciousness element. So when there are many different colors, okay, you distinctly recognize. And when there are different tastes, you distinctly recognize. So when there are huge crowd, you distinctly recognize your son, your brother, your sister, your father. So likewise, so you have this distinct ability to recognize. Now this has actually in the sanya aggregate as well, the sanya also. So there are what we have different marks, signs recorded within our mind. So using which we are actually recognizing. So actually they are fairly interrelated. So sanya khanda or aggregate of perception is fairly responsible for storing all these different marks, signs. Now the consciousness element make use of all these signs and marks and do this function. Distinct recognizing and ultimately establishing there. Not only recognizing. After recognition, it established there. Consciousness go and establish there. Now, therefore, this establishment also has to be avoided. So how to make the mind free from establishment, free from footing somewhere? Now typically when we grasp something, our mind is established there, we are strongly footing there, grounded there, and we are there. So I am there. Say for example, even when I am looking something, so if the sight is quite beautiful, so my mind immediately go there. So now it starts to associate whatever that beautiful sight, and I am enjoying it. So I have become that, basically. Now I am a seer. I am looking. I am observing. So I am strongly coupled there, strongly based there, strongly founded there. So I am basically there. I have born there now. The notion of I operating there now. On the other hand, one can say the opposite. That is where the object is there, I am here. I am operating here, I am looking, I am observing, I am here. So basically, some strong notion of I is established here. So both have to be abandoned. So that means there can't be I either here or there, or even in between. So if you, when I am explaining this, you probably remember the Bahya Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, neva ida na hurang na ubhayantare. There is no I either here nor there, no in between. Neither here nor there, no in between. So how to do it? So that is depending on the fully on vipassana. So how to non-identify? So whenever mind go and attach, we have to do that non-identification. We have to disclaim it. So here it is mentioned in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, tang ne tam mama ne so hamasmi na me so attati eva me tang yatha bhutan sammapanyaya dattabba. It is now both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth element, and that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this is not, this is I am not, this is not myself. So this is how he understood it. This is not mine, this is, this I am not, and this is not myself. Actually, this kind of a statement sometimes we can use as a reminder during the practice. But most important thing is, through observation you may slowly understand the impermanent nature, slowly understand this unsatisfactory nature, slowly understand the non-self nature. It is not that we are trying to condition the mind saying impermanent, impermanent, or unsatisfactory, unsatisfactory, or non-self, non-self. Rather, through observation, that understanding has to happen. So that is why proper investigation is extremely important. So you are recognizing how different elements are available, how they are manifesting, how they come and go, how they appear and disappear. So then you may immediately slowly understand, so they are not permanent, they are impermanent, they are inconstant. And similarly, constantly all these different internal and external physical things are constantly subjected to this arising and passing, constantly subjected to this change. Then how can there be kind of a satisfaction, happiness? Then you may understand kind of the unsatisfactoriness or the dukkha. Now, when things are constantly changing, arising and passing away, where there is an unchanging phenomena, unchanging core, kind of an essence, so then you can't have it. I mean, basically you understand, okay, everything is beyond my control, then how can there be a self? So these kind of understanding, insights, have to slowly emerge through the practice. So we can't force them to happen, rather we continue the observation. While proper observation, these insights have to happen. So it's a kind of a law. It's not that we are generating them, rather we are preparing the conducive environment, and we continue our practice. So through the practice, these insights happen. Now, with respect to the consciousness element, similar, say you are observing all these different phenomena, their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. While you are doing that, so the consciousness can't find a footing to establish. Previously, whenever we see things as permanent, satisfiable, interesting, desirable, and it belongs to me, then easily consciousness find a footing. But on the other hand, when one is practicing vipassana, so the opposite is what he is understanding. Things are impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self, non-governable, doesn't belong to me, it is merely elements. So likewise, you have kind of a detachment. So the consciousness to establish, kind of an attachment is there. Attachment has to be available. Without an attachment, can't establish consciousness. But when the environment is prepared for non-grasping, non-attachment, or dispassion, then the consciousness can't find a place or can't strongly find a footing to establish. When consciousness can't find a footing to establish, so then it becomes unestablished. That's why we call unmanifested. Now, therefore, operating on this consciousness element is a little tricky. So we can't immediately start that. So we have to start from the very basic, maybe earth element, maybe water element, maybe air element. So that is where we start. Say, for example, if you are practicing rising and falling, so we are trying to operate with the earth, the air element beginning. So when you are using the air element to establish mindfulness, slowly you may even understand the earth element. You may understand the fire element. So likewise, the other elements also are able to understand. Their manifestation is able to understand. As a result of that, you may understand their common characteristics, how they are coming and going, how they are vulnerable, how they are impermanent. So slowly, then the consciousness kind of detached from these elements ultimately get freed. So probably you can remember we were discussing Upaya Sutta, and there we discuss Rupa Dhatu Yache Bhikkave Bhikkhuno Rago Pahino Hoti Ragasya Pahana Vachichita Rammanam Patittha Vinyanasa Nohoti. So, consciousness element requires either Patavi Dhatu, or basically we can say Rupa Dhatu. Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo, Space, all are Rupa Dhatu. Or consciousness element requires Vedana, that's a feeling. Or it requires the Sanya, the perceptions. Or it requires the Sankhara, the formations. Now, based upon any of these, the consciousness element establishes. Now, through the practice, the attachment to any of these elements are slowly abandoned, slowly faded away. Now, consciousness element don't have any place to establish. Whatever the attachment towards the Rupa Dhatu, the form element, completely abandoned. Whatever attachment had towards the Vedana, that's also abandoned. Whatever attachment had towards the, say, perceptions, sanya, that's also abandoned. Whatever attachment had towards the sankhara, formation, that's also abandoned. So then there is no place for the consciousness to establish. Now that is how, ultimately, what Buddha mentioned, patittita vinyanasa nohoti. So the established consciousness is not there. Tang apatititang vinyanang avirulhang anabisankacha vimuttang. Vimuttatta titang titatta santusitang tasusitang parisasati. Now, anabisankacha vimuttang. So Buddha mentioned, so when vinyana is not established, it is not growing there. And it is not doing any kind of formations, preparations. As a result of that, it gets freed. Now this is what technically happened during the process. Now in the answer given by the Arahant in the Chabbisodhana Sutta doesn't contain that information. Rather he mentioned, so whatever there was, any kind of an attachment, any kind of grasping, or any kind of mental standpoint, or any kind of latent tendency with respect to any of these elements, now they are faded away. Now they are abandoned, now they are relinquished, and now they are given up. As a result of that, vimuttam me chittanti vajana. Now my mind is free. So interesting, in a way that we have to analyze, how to analyze this all different answers. Actually, we have to take some help from Satipatthana, and so that we can understand so how this process has happened. So then one can say he did the same thing for earth element, fire element, air element, water element, space element, consciousness element. As a result of that, now consciousness is established nowhere. So his mind has become completely free, not established anywhere. So this is the answer that he has given. So, and there also Buddha mentioned, so you can happy about it. And without being satisfied there, you have to ask another question. So So that question we will discuss next week. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
To participate in the Q&A, you may submit your questions via the chat or you may raise your hand.
Actually, today's discussion is fairly technical because, I mean, these are some stuff that we have to deal little detail and again technically. I can't say there is much aesthetic available here. Anyway, the questions are straightforward in the sense some direct questions, and the answers are sometimes explanatory, dealt with some deep vipassana, not merely say faith or anything, but rather the real work that he has done. So it is something that we can understand, okay, it is based on the practice that the answers are based on. I mean, if one didn't do any kind of a practice, then we can't properly answer because there is no hands-on experience. So, for example, when you recognize kind of a person who is a very good guitarist, for example, and probably you may ask from him how you have become so much popular or kind of a famous guitarist. Or capable guitarist, then he can tell you how he has done that. He may have started from very basics and how to touch the strings and how to hold the picking and how to recognize different tones, and slowly he may have practiced several years of practice has brought him or has made him a very good player, very good guitarist. So likewise, if one has really done the job, really done the practice, so then he know his stuff. So similarly here also, so if the person is really an arahant, a true person, then definitely he know the stuff. So that's why Buddha mentioned in the sutta, so that this person may answer easily. He doesn't need to think about and look at a book and say. Rather, he may immediately answer. So the term used there is quite interesting. When a bhikkhu is one of with tains destroyed, completely liberated through final world, this is the natural way for him to answer. So naturally, he may answer like this. So he doesn't need to think or ponder or look at a book or ask from someone else, not like that. Rather, he directly, naturally will answer like this. It doesn't say that, I mean, strictly with these, each and every word that he have to answer. Now say, for example, in certain exams, that you have to put each and every word available in the paragraph, what you have learned, then only you are given 100 marks. So something like that. But it doesn't mean here. Rather, when he has done the job, so probably he may answer very closely according to the given sort of this kind of solutions. So it seems no question. Okay, one question has come.
Thank you, Jennifer. Tirumasarnai Bhante.
Yes.
My question is not based on today's Dhamma sermon.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I listened to Chandima Sutta by Loku Swami Nohase.
Uh-huh.
And he was mentioning balancing of faith and wisdom and five faculties.
Mm-hmm.
And wisdom as, please correct me if I'm wrong, wisdom as I understand means things, see things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
So he mentioned about faith. One is blind faith, and he mentioned three other types, and it was so fast I could not understand all of them. But I was wondering, what does it mean by balancing faith and wisdom? Because wisdom, how can it be too much wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so could you please help me here?
Yeah. So basically, you know that there are five faculties: Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Saddha is the faith,
yeah.
Viriya, effort, Sati, mindfulness, Samadhi, concentration, and Panya, the wisdom. So these are the five faculties that we are talking. And at the beginning, we don't know much about them, and we don't know even the presence of them, and we are simply ignorant. But when we are continuing the practice, probably we may understand, okay, today my mind is quite mindful. Oh, I am quite mindful. Today everything happened mindfully. I didn't forget things. And I was able to maintain mindfulness. So likewise, I have kind of a distinctly understand, okay, mindfulness is really pioneering today. Really become the leader today. Or certain other days, I can understand, okay, I don't have much mindfulness. But say, wisdom is operating. Say I can easily understand things quickly, even when others are simply thinking, I can immediately give an answer. So wherever it is, I am with sharp wisdom. So a kind of presence of wisdom one can understand. So likewise, each and every faculty can take the leading role. Or say, for example, in the saddha, say when saddha is predominant, say you are more faithful, you are have more gratitude towards the Buddha, gratitude towards the Dhamma, and maybe even even the others, maybe even parents or whatever it is. So that saddha is value operating, and you feel kind of more heartfelt, and you feel soft. So this is the operation of the saddha. And on the other hand, effort. Say certain days they are quite effortful, energetic. And you can sit for long, and you can walk many hours, and you can dedicate yourself for long. So likewise, the effort is quite predominant, and that is something that you can learn. So these are the availability of different faculties, and we can now, the practitioner can distinctly recognize their availability, their presence as you are practicing. Now then we can say, okay, they have come to the level of faculty, indriya. And when they are there, say when something has come forward, the others are little at the background. So the mindfulness is the one doing the proper balancing. Say for example, as you mentioned, saddha and wisdom, if they are not properly balanced, then certain properties we can understand. Say for example, if someone hasn't grown enough faith, merely the wisdom, and we can't say it is proper wisdom, it is merely some sort of kind of intellectual understanding or maybe distinctly recognizing, but not properly balanced with saddha. So that is where a person can become cunning or maybe cheating, because he has some sort of intelligence, but it is not properly balanced through saddha. But on the other hand, if there is no wisdom, merely faith has become too much, then it is, I mean, going for the blind faith and going for too much association, too much attachment, become emotional. So it is not properly grounded on the wisdom. So that's why sometimes people say, okay, you are going to the temple and you are very much being at the shrine room so long and maybe offering food and everything and all these things. But I mean, not properly balancing. I mean, you are not into meditation or investigation or any of those activities. Rather, you are fully much with the faith. So the faith and wisdom has to be properly coupled, properly balanced. So then you have a kind of a balanced approach. You are not excess with the wisdom, you are not excess with the faith. So that's properly balanced. So sometimes when wisdom is telling something to do, so you may have kind of a softening part coming from faith. So as a result of that, probably you can even balance what is coming through the wisdom. Because kind of softening part is operating through the faith. Now, if we consider samadhi and effort, virya and samadhi, the concentration and effort, so that too also has to be balanced. For example, at the beginning you have to exert a lot of effort because the defilements are very high and the distractions are so many. So as a result of that, you have to exert fair amount of effort to manage the mind, to control the mind. But later, if you are maintaining that kind of an effort, it is harmful for the growing of concentration. For the concentration to further develop, you have to now optimize the effort. Only the necessary amount of effort has to be applied. Then only slowly very refined kind of concentration may grow. But if you are strongly holding, strongly putting effort, then the refinement may not happen. So the refinement requires very relaxed mind. Only the necessary amount of effort has to be maintained. So when you are doing that, then okay, the mind is going deeper, it is softly being with the object and maintaining kind of a balance, and you start to have relaxed mind. So these are certain attributes of the developed kind of concentration. So therefore the concentration and effort also have to be balanced. So all these the observation part is done by the middle one, that is the sati, the mindfulness. Mindfulness is the one telling you, okay, this is too much, this is too less, now you got to balance these. So that observation part is done by the mindfulness. Hope you understood.
Yes, Pante, most of it.
Yeah.
Earlier we had faith, you know, you worship Buddha and everything, but now we know for sure that this is the only way out. So we trust Dhamma and this teaching, and then we have this unshaken faith.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom, in the sense what I understood was insight. So maybe I'm wrong here.
That is also correct. Now, say for example, if you are practicing Dhatu Manasikara, today we discussed that, Dhatu Manasikara, so that is one practice which is more promoting wisdom. Now, when it is going excess, it is finding even faults of yourself, finding faults with others, because now the wisdom faculty is sharpening, and as a result of that, even very minor things you can quickly recognize, quickly understand, and so that even has a prone to kind of finding faults with others. Now, at that moment, if you are not having enough softening coming through the, say, faith, then you get into quarrel and you go to arguments and you are very much hating others, and because it's not properly balanced. You are practicing, which is you are practicing Dhatu Manasikara, but the day-to-day activities or day-to-day associations you can't maintain because your wisdom faculty is too strong and your softening part is absent.
Oh, I see. It happened to me actually. It's not with the outside world. It's with myself.
Mm-hmm.
When I see defilement arising, and my mind get really uneasy. Get agitated, but it goes away.
Yeah.
But at first, it's like I am seeing my own fault.
Yes.
So the equanimity is not there at the beginning.
Yeah. That's
and
why
I have to put an effort and remind myself be neutral about it. Mm. But now I understand what you mean by too much.
Yeah, and again, when you understand your own faults, so if you are trying to self-criticize or I mean that kind of thing, that is wrong. But the softening part coming through the saddha helps you to acknowledge, okay, you are forgiving yourself, okay, I'm doing as much as possible, I will try my best. So likewise, kind of softening part, consolation is coming from the faith side. So that is two sides. One side is showing you the fault, showing you errors and maybe criticizing. The other part say, okay, don't worry, I will look into it, let's forgive it. So likewise, that is operating.
I see. Yeah, it happened to me in walking meditation too, you know, when my mind start wandering. Earlier, I my mind is not happy after I recognize it. But now I can be neutral about it because I know that it's temporary, it's coming back.
Yes.
But I did not understand it's, I am overanalyzing myself. I didn't understand at the beginning.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Bandit. It's very clear.
Okay. So we are getting another question from here. Yes. Yeah.
As a follow-up to that question, Bhante.
Yeah.
Because I've also experienced these very large imbalances in faith and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the faith will be so kind of emotional that the little bit of wisdom can say, like, you know, this might lead to a lot of energy, but it's not actually so wise because you're quite attached.
Correct.
And It won't lead to dhamma necessarily.
Correct.
But it will lead to that striving that you want. And then other times the wisdom will be so much that, maybe not wisdom, but more like the intellect.
Intellect, yeah.
Will be like so nitpicky.
Exactly.
That like it feels like the mind is very fast and it can pinpoint and analyze.
Yes,
but
yes.
But then one loses the faith because it finds the faults too much.
Too much.
Whether in oneself or in others.
Exactly.
So what are like practical ways to actually bring up the faith when it needs to be brought up?
Yeah.
Or to bring up the wisdom when it needs to be brought up?
No, actually, when you understand that it is too much, as you said, picking things and even trivial things, it is finding out as huge things and finding fault within yourself and the others, then you say, okay, if you are practicing Dhatu Manasikara strongly, you better little stop it. Because it's too much now. Now you have to participate in Vandana, chanting some paritta, and you have to a little soften yourself.
Right.
And you need to understand, even though they are correct, what the wisdom is telling are correct, you can't immediately achieve it.
Right.
You can't become an arahant overnight.
Yes.
Now, probably wisdom is telling you have so many faults right now, you have so many shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
And you simply acknowledge it, and you kind of self-forgiving kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You are being little compassionate to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that softening part is an attribute of saddha. So that saddha has to be developed on such occasion.
Right.
Say again, you are a little bit of doing Buddha Anusati.
Mm-hmm.
Say you are doing some metta.
Mm-hmm.
So that mind becomes softened and again accepting, forgiving, acknowledging. Happiness is arising because when too many faults are recognized through intellect, then you become really unhappy.
Yes.
You become frustrated.
Yes, sir.
So, and then ultimately self-hate can even arise.
Yes.
So that has to be minimized by maybe you can temporarily stop practicing that particular vipassana and you can come up with some of the practice and again calm down yourself because this has to be balanced. It's not that immediately we can achieve something, that these faculties have to be well balanced, then only a kind of healthy mind is available.
Yes.
So these two are two parts, two sides in the practice. So these two sides have to be properly balanced, then the healthy mind is available.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I find sometimes when there's like the sandha is very much, then it feels like kind of everyone around is like Arya, and everyone is worth following, and it is wonderful. But then sometimes when the Anya is too much, it's like everyone is wrong.
Everyone is wrong.
No
exactly.
There's no Dhamma possible.
Exactly.
We all, like, no one is good, as good as the Buddha.
Exactly.
And it's very hard to kind of
middle. So very interesting examples that he is giving, Venerable Sudhira is giving. So when you have two wisdom, so then you find everyone is faulty and everyone has so many the shortcomings. So there is no one that we can trust. But on the other hand, when faith is too much, so you feel like everyone is like arahant, so everyone are venerable, venerables, and everyone could be respected. So that side of thing. But when you have both balance, then probably you can say, okay, these persons are, trustworthy, they are, practicing diligently, and certain others are not practicing diligently. But still you are able to even forgive them. Say the people who are not practicing also you can include within your practice. You can say, I am having compassion towards them. I have loving kindness towards them. On the other hand, when certain people are practicing and they are doing diligent, you can appreciate that. You can have mudita towards them.
Mm-hmm.
So likewise, it's a very beautiful thing.
There's always a key for dhamma.
Exactly.
But it's not always so easy to find.
Not always easy, yes. Yeah. We can go for the Zoom questions.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next question, I'd like to invite Ratika. You may unmute.
Thank you.
Well,
Puruan 79 Bhante.
Yes. After a long time.
Yes, I wasn't in town for 4 months and I was out of country.
Uh-huh.
Various reasons for family commitments, I was in 4 different countries.
Uh-huh. Right.
Bhante, can I ask you a question on my meditation?
Okay.
And the first one is on my walking meditation, and I was at a 10-day retreat.
Yeah.
And did anapanasati and walking meditation. So I like to, it was a meditation center of the Burmese tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So can I will tell you my walking meditation first.
Yeah.
So I was about, sometimes I would say 40 minutes average, about 3 times a day, and the one I'm going to describe was on day 7. So my path was about 30 steps because I measured it. My first I measured it,
mm-hmm.
And it was on a level ground, and it was in a very peaceful and beautiful field, full of flowers. So I was, when I found that place to walk, because a lot of it was very hilly too, I was very happy, and I started walking, and I found that it was going really well. My, I could feel the sensation. I focused on the sole of my feet, and I could feel the sensations very well. And the first 30 steps, I was very, very concentrated, focused. And I could feel the sensation, and then I continued, and then I realized there were very few thoughts, and all the time I was feeling the sensation on the sole of my feet, back and forth, and then I heard the sound of a bird calling, then I focused back, and I was again very, very focused, then I felt the breeze on my face, and it was kind of cool. And it was back again. And after a while, I felt as if I was floating. And I continued like that, walking back and forth, 30 steps this way, that way. Nobody interrupted me until the gong sounded.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know what you feel and how I can improve my meditation.
Yeah, the thing is now, overall, you are putting kind of emphasis to the outside environment and other secondary factors. How about your focused experience? Say, while walking, what are the things that you really experience in terms of the foot?
To begin with, I was feeling the sensation on the heel being hard, and the sensation on the, I put my heel down first, and then I put the ball of my foot down first, and it was softer there. I could feel myself being pushed forward by the by my movement,
mm-hmm.
but that happened for about 3 or maybe, I don't know, a short time,
mm.
and after that, felt as if I was just floating back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The 2 times that I was, my thoughts left the feet were the 2 I described,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It was very few thoughts. So most of the other time, I was feeling the sensations of the foot itself.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel the sometimes because of the pebbles on the path, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could feel it being hard and things like that. But right all the time, it was on the sensation that I was focused.
Okay, so those are the important things. Say, when you are walking, slowly abandon all those other labels and names that you are given to all the different things, and slowly, slowly simplify your understanding or simplify your experience and limit it to the sensations. And now you are experiencing, you are, or trying to experience what really happened to these sensations, and no need to give even names to them. I mean, maybe pleasurable, pleasurable, neutral, and all these things, or maybe painful, but no need to give even names to them. And you are observing what is really happening to these little sensations. And when you are doing that kind of a very refined observation, then you can't bear all these, or you can't hold all these different labels, names, and where you are, what time is it. So those information may slowly abandon, and you are very focused on what you are doing, what you are closely examining. So that is, examination has to be given more focus, more attention, or more strength. Yeah.
So the next meditation, it was back to like normally do it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I guess there was an expectation that it would be that it was so smooth and so relaxed and so equanimous.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel any thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was just doing it. But the next one I did, the next session, the walking session, I found that I was back again with the sensation on my feet sometimes. Very focused, I could see very clearly me walking, turning, coming back,
mm-hmm.
and some were coming, a lot of thoughts were coming in between.
Mm-hmm.
So that this was, I felt that this was okay, this was impermanent. This time it was like this time it was like that, but both times I was observing whatever I felt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I took from that you know, it's changing, it's not going to remain the same way.
Yeah. So that understanding is the insight that through observation you may get. So that to happen, your mind has to be very calm and relaxed, and the observation has to be given the more prominence, and then you do that observation for a long time. Then slowly you may understand how impermanent they are, unsatisfactory they are, ungovernable they are. So that becomes kind of an insight you have based on the observation.
Okay. So in addition to the feet, even though I'm doing on my feet, sometimes I can feel sensations on my face.
Yeah.
Not like the breeze on it, I can feel a little sensation on my face, and even at other times. So
mm-hmm.
I will tell them about my breathing awareness meditation. So the breathing awareness meditation is usually 1 hour, but some were longer. And I sat on the floor when it is 1 hour, but when it was 1.5 to 2 hours, I sat on a chair. What I noticed was, most of the time, awareness, the meditation was not the. To start with, it was not on the area between the tip of the nose and the upper lip.
Mm-hmm.
At some, it was inside. I could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I start in out because it's very, very subtle and very short.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, I don't want even to say in out because it's
good,
so.
Good.
It's,
yeah.
So I just drop it.
Correct.
But I didn't realize that it. I realized suddenly that it was not. On the tip, not the not angular place, but somewhere inside.
Yeah. That's fine. That would be fine. Yeah, that would be fine. And if it is prominent there, little bit of inside, you can just keep it there. And as you said, no need to say in out, because now it is somewhat gross, and because the breath has become so refined, and so now you can observe this refined breath.
So does it matter that it is not in one place, right? Because I, when I was using the word in out, I didn't realize where it was. I was just seeing it as the in breath and the out breath.
Yeah.
And suddenly I recognized that it was no longer
mm-hmm.
in this place, and later it was on that, and I could feel the touch on just near the upper lip.
Mm-hmm.
And right along, I'm feeling a lot of sensations from under my arm all the way going down my torso.
Okay, now you can observe them as well. Now that sensations are available means now your mind is prepared for observing them, and now some raw material are available for vipassana. Now you don't need to stick on to breath. Now you can start observing those sensations as well.
Oh, okay. So now they were not there all the time, but it's like an electric current. It's running from under my armpit down the both sides,
mm-hmm.
On the body, down the arm, up to the thigh,
mm-hmm.
right?
And actually here also, when you are observing these sensations, forget about all these labels. And you don't need to know the time, you don't need to know the place. You know only the sensation. You know only the sensation, and it is there somewhere. And you only know how this particular sensation is behaving, that's all. And simplify your meditation so that your attention is more focused on that. Your whole mental energy is established there to this close examination.
Right. It's like a vibration or something coming and going.
No problem.
So fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's moving from one place to another.
Yeah.
So sometimes like that, sometimes it's on the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhere else. So when that happens, then it doesn't matter that I don't focus on the anapanasati.
No.
Just
yeah, yeah. That's right.
That?
Yeah.
And then when that disappears, I come back to the breathing awareness. Is that it?
Yeah. If there is nothing to observe, you can come back to breathing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I don't feel any pain, but sometimes I feel the seat, I know that I'm seated on the cushion,
mm-hmm.
but I was not feeling any pain on my legs or any or on my body or anything like that.
Okay, fine. That's fine.
Any much pressure anywhere, except I knew I was seated.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there are whatever the sensation, it could be pressure, it could be heat, it could be, say, pain, maybe pleasure. So, different things are there. So, we can commonly say as sensations, but it includes many different varieties of things, maybe different kinds of feelings, maybe different kinds of, say, element characteristics. And even later, you can watch the mind as well. How mind is behaving
okay.
right now.
So
yeah.
I can look at the same time for sensations of the body and feelings of the mind.
Yeah, maybe not at the same time, but when you are confident.
Not at the same time,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
the same meditation.
Yeah, 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 sure. Can.
So, most of the time it was equanimous. That's
mm.
why I said that I didn't feel any really pain.
Yeah.
I didn't feel anything that I wanted to try to push away.
Yes,
because
yes.
No,
yeah, you need to. I mean, you need to include everything.
Wrong, that's right.
Yeah, you need. You can include everything rather than pushing anything away. You can get. I mean, get make use of everything. Everything is kind of raw material for your practice.
But most of the time, I should be still equanimous, right?
I mean, don't try to. I mean.
If I'm feeling happy, that's okay. I'm feeling happy.
Can. Yeah, you can be happy. I mean, you don't need to force yourself.
No, what I mean is that, oh, this is good. I can feel these sensations now.
Yeah, yes. And the
but
thing is, I mean,
attached to the sensation. That's what I meant.
No, I mean, if you naturally become equanimous, that's good. But again, suppose the mind is quite happily doing the observation, that's also fine. You don't need to interfere.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, Bhante. We have a written question.
Yeah.
Says, dear Bhante, how do we understand air element by observing rise and fall of abdomen? Or do we reflect the elements as a separate practice? Also, what is the difference between giving up chaga and relinquishing patini saga?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually the air element, now because of the air element, the movements are happening. As I mentioned, one important characteristics of the air element is the movement. So whenever you recognize kind of movement, motion, so that is where the presence of air element. Now, when rising and falling is there, so during the rising cycle, okay, your abdomen is moving forward. During the falling cycle, your abdomen is moving backward. So that is a movement. So more you can actually forget about the names rising and falling. You can simply be with these movements. So they are what you are experiencing is the air element. So even in the breathing, so if you are experiencing the breath of the air, the breath, so coming and going, so that's coming and going, the movement part really belong to the air element. So that air element has this movement, so wherever you experience movement, vibrations, so then that is the air element that you are experiencing. And the other thing, chaga and patanisagga, they are very similar. Chago, Patinisaggo, Mutti, Analyo, so these are different terms even Buddha used to explain the Nibbana. So you are basically relinquishing, you are basically abandoning. So there is, these are some similar words, but on the other hand, there are certain other, say, practices like Patinisagga and Upasana. So there are a little bit of emphasis is there. So whatever the condition phenomena you are abandoning, at the same time, you are taking your mind back to the emptiness. So it's a kind of a two process. So relinquishing abandoning all the different conditioned phenomena, again, you are re-establishing yourself with the emptiness. So these two sides are there. So chaga also very much similar. So you are giving up whatever the conditioned phenomena, whatever the attachments you are giving up.
Can I add one comment?
Yeah.
It's something that I learned from another monk.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone asked not between chaga and patinisagga, but chaga and dana.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes chaga is also used with that sense,
yes,
of giving.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he said is it's like dana, where you kind of, like, you feel generous to give, but it has more renunciation to it.
Renunciation. Mm-hmm.
Because chaga is like, yeah, have it, I don't want it. Give it up.
Right.
So like when a samana would go forth,
right,
they would give up all their belongings.
Correct.
Kind of thing.
Uh-huh. That is coming under dana.
Yeah, that was under chaga.
Chaga. Uh-huh.
So dana is more like very nice.
Nice and
chaga
generous.
Is more like just
okay. The patinisanga has a little bit of giving up.
Yes.
So kind of an abandonment, and there is no generosity there at all.
Yes.
I mean, because you are very much like you have enough of conditioned phenomena. Now you don't want to attach to any of them.
Yeah.
So you are readily abandoning things, relinquishing things. Yeah.
So maybe chaga has a little bit of generosity.
Maybe.
And then generosity has very little of relinquishment.
Relinquishment. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. The next written question says, dear Bhante, is consciousness required to recognize other four aggregates? My understanding is that without consciousness, one cannot see form, etc.
Hmm. Yeah, actually, definitely. I mean, we are operating through consciousness aggregating. So that's why, it's very much like the difficult part. Knowing consciousness is the difficult part because we need consciousness to recognize the other activities, other aggregates. Say form aggregate, feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, and the sankhara aggregate. Interesting point is that Buddha mentioned through the development of wisdom, panya is the one that you have to know the consciousness. So actually, by all these different processes, we are developing wisdom. So it is not that we have to separately do something to know consciousness aggregate. Rather, when we are doing slowly, when you are doing the Kaya Anupassana, when you are doing Vedana Anupassana, when you are doing Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana. So this is the ground we are preparing wisdom, slowly developing wisdom. So more and more wisdom is developed, then slowly we understand the operation of consciousness as well. So it's a kind of a roundabout method in a way. We can't directly, immediately know consciousness, but rather by using various other mechanisms we are developing wisdom. Then this wisdom is capable of knowing the exact function and different maybe illusions, perversions made by the consciousness. Then you can abandon consciousness as well, or the you can relinquish the establishment of the consciousness as well. Then you may have the, say we can say, call it say pure consciousness or pure awareness, where the consciousness is not established. So that is where different terminology we have to use when one has developed wisdom. Yeah, there's another one raised hand. Maybe Kumudini, you can put your question.
Kumudini, you may unmute.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. My one is very quick. I recently started doing a lot of Mitta Bhavana, and I was following guided meditation, and it was telling me to do loving kindness towards parents, but my parents are deceased, and I was wondering if that is okay.
Yeah, typically in metta meditation, we are not taking the deceased people, we are taking only the living people. And so that is one kind of a little rule that we are taking. Say, for example, when you are doing metta, immediately you are not taking the opposite sex person, because it might lead to kind of a lust. At the same time, we are not taking the deceased people. I don't know what exactly is the reason, by the way, we are not taking, but we are, because we need to have kind of a direct connection or kind of a direct feeling, so my metta is really benefiting another person, or it's available, it is something real. So then that kind of a live experience is possible when people are alive, available. So therefore, typically we are not doing for deceased people. But anyway, when you are, quite familiar with metta, then you can include all the beings. Say, to all the beings you are spreading metta, actually, even though they are deceased in this life, now they are somewhere available. We can say so. I mean, if they are not arahants, definitely they are reborn to somewhere. So then everybody is included. So including them, including whoever passed away, now they have reappeared at some other place. Now, when you are saying may all the beings well and happy, so that includes everyone, everybody, every animal, every deva, everyone is included.
Going into six directions, then that gets included, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Another question to be clarified about, we're saying the four elements, space and consciousness, right?
Yes.
So normally we compare these elements with animate things as well as inanimate.
Yes.
So how can you say that there is consciousness in inanimate?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Actually, inanimate things only have five elements, not the consciousness
right.
element. Yeah.
So you have to understand it in that manner, right?
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Much
okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Everyone's
online. Hi, Bhante. I believe that's the last question for today.
Okay. Good. Okay, then we can wind up the session. We have spent a sharp 1.5 hours. So with that, actually we were able to discuss some Dhamma and again listen to certain aspects of the Buddha's teaching. And again, your participation is also valuable. And with that, whatever the merit that we have accumulated, we'll share with all the past relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු